You're listening to That's the Tea with Alessandra G. It's the best kind of gossip on demand every week. Girl talk, no filter. Here's your sis, Alessandra G.
Welcome back to That's the Tea with Alessandra G. It's your sis. Thanks for tuning in to another segment of Friday Features. Now, today we're going to be doing something a little bit different and not what we're used to doing on Friday Features, which is talking to artists. Instead, we're going to be talking to someone who works more behind the scenes with artists. She knows a ton about the app that we love and love to hate. You know what I'm going to say, TikTok, as well as how artists can utilize social media and the internet to expand their careers and so much more. If you want to be an influencer, if you want to just know more about social media, you've tuned in to the right episode. Okay, I think it's time for me to introduce our special guest today. Her name is Cassie Petrie. She is one of the co-founders of CrowdSurf. She's worked with almost all of your favorite artists, I'm sure of that. And she knows way more about social media and influencing than I ever will. So let's get into this chat and hear what Cassie has to say. She has some great advice for musicians, artists, wannabe influencers, and pretty much everyone in between that is interested in social media. And I've learned a ton so far, so let's just jump right in.
Welcome to Friday Features. Get to know your favorite artists, influencers, and musicians exclusively on That's the Tea with Alessandra G.
Hi, Cassie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good, you know, just catching up on some new music, been on social media, been working. You know all about that, though. So what have you been up to recently? I know you have a ton going on. I don't even know how you balance everything that you do, but how's life been going so far?
Well,
this week, at least.
Yeah, I mean, recently, the past couple weeks, I've been kind of feeling it's a bit more like pre-pandemic than everything. I've been traveling a lot, doing a lot of in-person meetings, and that's felt really good because when you meet people in person, I find that you tend to like them more. You understand what they're saying to you on text better, on email better. You figure out better ways to work together or more ways to work together. And it's just always really good to be traveling and connecting with people that you haven't seen in a while in person, or a lot of times it's connecting with people that you've known on email or text or phone for years, but you never got to see them in person. So I love that too. So I'm just happy to be out and doing meetings and connecting with people in person again. It's been awesome.
Yeah, you can say that again. I do not miss the pandemic life at all. And I feel like we're finally readjusting. And I totally get what you mean by, you know, putting faces to emails because, man, we've been on our computers and talking to people, you know, over text and over the phone for way too long. So getting to actually be in the same room as someone, it's pretty crazy how exciting it is now. Before, yeah, it wasn't super exciting. Now it's like, wow, this is crazy. So that's kind of weird.
Yeah. Well, I've actually always really enjoyed connecting with people in person. And whenever I travel, even if it's not for work, I find people to meet with for work. One big secret, or not big secret, it's really nice for tax deductions when you can make part of your trip work related. So I always like to do that. But the second part of it is just, I think that connecting with people who may not have expected you to ask to have lunch with them or do a meeting with them, it always turns out for the positive. It's always a good experience. I feel like I always have good things to me come from it. And I feel like just in general, I'm happier and like the people I work with more. That's kind of my way of networking, because I remember when I was in college, I was sort of under the impression that networking meant like, I have to go to this party and I have to like meet 50 people. And that is not my superpower. I'm not good at that. That actually makes me really uncomfortable. I feel like I don't really get a lot out of that. I'm meeting people genuinely because I want to. I don't set up a meeting with an agenda of like, I'm going to meet this person because I want to work with this person they work with, or because, you know, I want more business at this label. No, I just generally just want to meet them. Like I don't have a goal beyond that when I set up these meetings. And I think that makes there be a lot less pressure and makes it fun and makes it exciting to, you know, meet people that work in the social media and digital and, you know, music community.
That makes a lot of sense. And I know you've been doing so much, speaking of social media, with social media influencers, musicians, you're all over the place covering everything and just killing it, which is amazing. And you're like a marketing guru. So tell me a little bit about how that got started for you when you first realized, you know, you were interested in marketing and specifically working with people, you know, in that digital space, and kind of how that landscape has changed too over the past few years with TikTok kind of blowing up and everything. I'm sure you could probably go on for an hour, but a little elevator pitch of, you know, how you got started and where you think we're at now with that stuff.
Yeah. So when I first started in digital marketing, I always pin it back to a moment when I was probably 11 years old. AOL had just come into the world, so people were getting internet access for the first time. And around the same time AOL was coming into the world, the Backstreet Boys came into my life. And I combined sort of those two interests in showing my fandom for them. So I coded a website. I bought a book about coding a website. I coded a website to like show my love for them. I would kill to be able to find that website now. It's probably absolutely terrible and hilarious. But I did that. And then I also ran an AOL, it's basically an email list. At that time we called them like quote unquote zines, but I ran one of those for them and it was super successful. And I really enjoyed being a part of a fan community and started doing that for other artists as well over the next several years. And when I was about 15 or 16, a family friend of mine flagged to me, hey, you know, there are people in entertainment that aren't on stage and there are schools that you can go to study that. And I never really thought about the people not on stage up until that moment, because I knew I couldn't be on stage. I'm not a singer. I don't have any sort of creative talent in that capacity whatsoever. So I never even had that dream. But when I thought about the people that support those people, that became my dream. I was like, wow, I can do that. So I became obsessed with the idea of working in music, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I didn't even really have the opportunity to think too much about what I wanted to do in music, because every book I read told me how hard it is to get a job in music. So I think because I thought it was so hard, I didn't even think past what I would do. I was basically like, I'll take anything that they'll give me. And once I started interning and volunteering and having success in different places, I was able to sort of learn a little bit more about what I liked and didn't like. And I think going into it, I thought that I would be a booking agent because I really liked going to concerts. But then when I worked at a booking agency, I realized that it was actually very little to do with going to concerts and more to do with contracts, logistics, and paperwork. And it just wasn't my vibe, but I'm glad I tried it to learn that it wasn't my vibe, because I think that eventually led me to MySpace, which I really loved and had a lot of ideas on how major label artists could use MySpace. And I really fell in love with that and felt like I added a lot of value to artists in that space. So I did some work at Warner Music Group on helping artists with MySpace actually set up some of the first major label artists on MySpace. So I was really like kind of a pioneer in like the early days of social media, you know, when this was when I was 18 years old. But I really saw a vision for how artists could use social media at that point. And just have slowly kind of evolved and grown from there. But once I found that and I was good at it and I felt like I was really adding a lot of value to both artists and the fan experience with those artists, I really kind of, you know, doubled down on that career lane. And that's where I started. And, you know, I do a lot of other things now, but that part of marketing and connecting artists with fans and helping artists use social media is still a big part of my life and my career, which is really cool.
Yeah, that is a really cool story. See, I don't know too much about MySpace, so it's kind of interesting to hear, you know, more about how things worked when that was popular and AOL. I think my mom still has an AOL email, which is funny. But that's so cool. Okay, so Backstreet Boys, that kind of got it started for you, your passion for them. it kind of came into getting involved in the music industry in some way, shape, or form. And then that kind of led you to creating or co-founding CrowdSurf, which is a huge business. How did you kind of get from there to CrowdSurf?
You know, when I was 15 or 16 and had this obsession with working in the music industry, I basically decided at that moment I have to do my best to get in the music business. So I lived in Louisville, Kentucky at the time, and I found every single opportunity under the sun to build my resume. I volunteered with a lot of local entities. So I volunteered to help local bands. So that was one, you know, way I got involved. I found local managers, I found local record labels. And then I also would do street team work for major label artists as they would come through locally as well. So I got, you know, all these really great experiences and was able to put them on my resume. This was about when I was 18 years old and I applied for a job at Warner Music Group as a college rep, which I think a lot of people in the music business get their start there. And they accepted me even before I was in college because they said, your resume is so good. And usually we don't take people till they're juniors or seniors, so they have more experience under their belt, but you already have more experience than most applicants at that level. So we're going to go ahead and take you in at this age, which was great because it got me in the Warner Music system and it got me the opportunity to meet people within Warner Music. They provided me the opportunity to move to Nashville to go study music business at Middle Tennessee State University. So I did that. And during the first semester of college, that's when MySpace came out and came onto the scene. And I noticed local groups at my college using it to promote shows. And I said to my boss at Warner Music that ran the college rep program, why don't big artists use MySpace? Can I pick one of our priority artists that we're marketing as college reps to, and can I run their MySpace page? And she was kind of like, I'm not really sure what that means, but yes, we'll figure out how you can spend some of your weekly hours doing this. So I did that for a group called the Click Five, and I got them to number one on MySpace. And people within the Warner Music Group heard about me doing this because they're like, this college rep is doing this thing on, you know, MySpace that maybe some of our other artists in the label group should do. So that ended up leading me to connect with the head of, it was called New Media at the time, but the head of New Media at the Warner Nashville office. And I ended up actually transferring to go work for her. And I actually worked for her full time while I was in college, but I was under a temp contract because there weren't jobs that were called social media manager, community manager, digital marketing manager. Those jobs didn't exist at that time. It was literally the VP of New Media, and then she had a person that worked with her that handled relationships with sites like Yahoo and AOL and MSN. And then there was me, who I did all the MySpace pages, but then I also was doing some, you know, executive assistant work. I was updating websites, you know, anything that kind of fell as more of an admin level task in the New Media department I was handling. And I temped for 3 years, and I really liked what I was doing, especially in the social media category, but there wasn't a place to grow within the company where I would get to stay in that. They offered me different jobs within the company, and I think I would have done well with them, but I really liked what I was doing, but I still wanted to grow my career because I'd been a temp at a record label for 3 years, and that kind of has a ceiling on it, and there wasn't a place for me to grow internally. And my business partner, Jade, was in a similar situation. So we both decided to start our own company where we could pick up more clients outside of Warner and be able to sort of grow our career and get paid more and spread our wings a little bit more, because we saw this was not going to go anywhere. And in fact, it was probably going to continue to grow in the music business, this social media marketing sector. We were like, this is going to go. And this was 15 years ago when this happened. We're like, this is going to be a really big part of how artists communicate with fans, and it's just going to keep getting bigger. It's not going to go anywhere, and we want to be a part of that. So we decided to leave Warner and start this company because we liked our job and we wanted to keep doing it, but we wanted to be able to grow as individuals and executives. So that's where, you know, when CrowdSurf was born in 2007, and we've grown slow and steady since then. Right now we have about 50 employees. And it's never been like an overnight thing. It's like, you know, we went from us two, and then we had our first employee, and then we had our second employee, and then we had five. So never, It feels like a lot now having 50, but it happened over 15 years.
Yeah, that is quite the story. So crazy. I actually know the Click Five, Just the Girl, you know?
Yeah, great
crazy.
Song.
And that's so interesting that, you know, in 15 years, this business has really like scaled and grown into what it is now, especially with how the industry is changing and evolving with social media. And MySpace is obviously like not as big of a thing, if a thing at all anymore. And
yeah.
It's like Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, all of that is completely taken over. And the one aspect of the industry that I am still so blown away by is TikTok, of course. And that's something that we talk about all the time on this podcast with artists that come through, and people are always either complaining or praising the app. Some people really hate the fact that they have to use it in order to, you know, kind of get to where they want to be in the music industry right now. And other people are like, I'm so grateful for it because I don't think anyone would have found my song if I didn't use this app. So there's definitely like a love-hate relationship with it. And I feel like it's just getting more and more out of control as the months go on. Tell me a little bit about how important TikTok is for a new artist and an established artist, because, you know, we've seen those viral TikToks of people like Halsey being like, my record label won't let me release, you know, X song unless it goes viral on TikTok. So here we are. And people that are just like, hey, I'm new and I want my song to blow up, so I'm just going to keep posting it on here until it gets the feedback and attention that I want it to. So where are we right now with TikTok, and how crazy has it been for someone like you who's been in this industry and in social media and music for so long to see where it's taken us? Because it's so wild to me.
Yeah, well, you know, I think TikTok for a lot of artists felt like an overnight thing they had to be a part of. But this has been building for 5 or 6 years now. I was asking my artists to get on Musical.ly in 2016. On Musical.ly, I would look at the charts every day. I actually ended up signing an artist for management based upon looking at the charts every day. But I was begging artists years ago to get on Musical.ly because I knew that it was going to be what it is now, 5 years ago. And when I saw it, I was just kind of like, yep, this is it. This is going to be the thing. Everyone should get on it now, because I'm a big believer in the equation that more time on a social media platform equals more time to gain followers. And the earlier you get on a platform, the earlier you buy into it, the more time you're going to have to accumulate followers over time. And also, I love getting into a platform in its growth phase. That's when people are signing up and looking for people to follow. So the easiest time to get a follow on social media is when somebody is signing up and like they're getting suggested followers, or they're looking for people to follow. Their feed isn't full yet, so there's space available. When it's harder to get a follower is when you're in a phase like Instagram is, where like everyone in the world has already signed up to it. There's nobody new to sign up to Instagram, so it's going to be harder to gain followers there. So at the beginning of 2020, when TikTok was in like its really big growth phase and kind of lasted through that year, like that was the best time to get a lot of followers in a short amount of time. And now you still can get a lot of followers, but it's just never going to be at that part of the bell curve where you can gain that quickly ever again, because it comes down to a math equation of like, there's only so many people in the world. And when everyone in the world is signed up for your platform, you kind of lose your ability to have growth. I've always been an advocate for TikTok, and I've been begging people for years to sign up, because I knew that it would be advantageous to them. You know, I've always been a believer in TikTok, and I still do see the advantages to using TikTok for sure. I just think it's important for artists to figure out how to be themselves on that platform and to not post a certain type of piece of content because they feel like they're supposed to, or because their record label told them to. They need to post at the frequency that feels comfortable to them and post the type of content that feels comfortable to them. And something that I feel like is really important for an artist to remember is that if somebody goes to your TikTok page and scrolls through the first like 6 to 10 videos, it should be clear to them that you are a music artist and not a general celebrity or influencer. And if they can't gather from your first couple of posts that you're a music artist, you're probably not posting the right type of content. But I see a lot of people sort of lose themselves in pressure from the music business and taking the wrong advice from people who are telling them to do something that they probably shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I think it's hard sometimes for artists to kind of find their lane on that platform, especially if they're starting now, like you said, not during the peak of its popularity. But do you think that it's important to kind of stick to your niche on that platform? Like, I know certain people are like, oh, I take popular songs and I like parody them, and then it gets people to come back to my page to look at my original music. You know, should people stick to what's popping off when they're posting, or, you know, kind of experiment and not get stuck in a lane, if that makes any sense?
Yeah, I think that you in general, no matter what social platform you're using, you have to know what your long-term goal is for your career. So if your long-term goal for your career is to sell tickets, sell merchandise, have streams, and have hardcore fans and be respected for music and be somebody who could be nominated for a Grammy one day, doing parodies frequently is probably not the best thing to do to reach your long-term goal. I think a lot of times people are short-sighted and do things that might get them engagement immediately or might grow their numbers immediately, but that doesn't necessarily lean into the long-term vision for yourself. And the problem when you do content like that is, let's say you want to be like Julia Michaels, but two of your first five videos are like sort of goofy parody videos, and then one is you doing a dance, and then maybe the other two are more about like your music. That kind of gives, if somebody's like deep diving into you and learning about you for the first time, that kind of gives a lot of mixed signals about who you are. And they're kind of like, oh, is this person like, do they want to be like a modern version Weird Al? Like, what, you know, what it, you know, that immediately makes people have a first impression of you that maybe you don't want to portray. So I think a lot of times it's important to sacrifice engagement in numbers for people being able to understand your brand quickly. And I think a lot of people make the mistake of chasing numbers versus thinking about, if somebody who I think would be my ideal fan is going to come to my page and maybe pass on me because they weren't actually able to grasp who I was quickly. You know, I think that's a bigger detriment than not having larger numbers on your video.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. That's not something that I've thought of before. Obviously, you're the mastermind here, not me. I guess with that being said, there are some artists out there that are like, I'm not jumping on this TikTok wave. I refuse to do it. I'm not going to sign to a label that makes me, you know, use TikTok or try to become popular on that app. I barely even want to do Instagram. I just want to do music. I'm so sick of the social media thing. Do you think that having that mentality kind of limits an upcoming and new artist? Or do you think that someone can still be, you know, super successful and not be on these apps? It is a big part of the industry, but what is your take on people that are like, I'm not doing it? Is that a bad idea?
I do think it's a bad idea. It's the equivalent of thinking about like between like, you know, thinking about the 70s, 80s and 90s. It's the equivalent of being like, I don't want to be on video. I just want to make music. I don't want to make videos that go on MTV. I think probably every big artist that exists that we see in arenas today likely has music videos that are on MTV. TikTok is the new MTV. And if you want people to discover you as a new artist, you have to be a part of the media platform that they discover new artists on. You might be able to have some level of success, you know, within Spotify, Apple world, and in terms of streaming without being on these platforms. But I don't know if you're going to be somebody that's going to be able to sustain long term and be able to sell tickets to concerts without being a part of what is the current, you know, MTV of this generation. I think maybe some legacy artists can get away with not being on TikTok because they already, you know, have a fan base and, you know, they don't have to build a new fan base. But I think any artist that is new is going to have to play the game in some way, shape, or form. All TikTok is it is a platform to post videos in vertical content shape. That's all it is from a software standpoint. If you don't look at what other people are saying about it or what other people are posting about it, it is a place where you can upload video content. And I imagine most artists can think of some form of video content that represents them.
That's a good way of putting it. I never thought of it as the MTV of this generation, but it does make sense. It does. And it really is. It's even easier than tuning into MTV. You just send it to your friend. Like, it's a whole different world. So that's some good advice. And I guess as a last question, I know you work a lot with artists who obviously are doing amazing on social media, who are very popular. For an upcoming artist who is looking to, you know, get their music out there and kind of scale their brand, what advice do you have for them on social media? Just like a few pointers of how they can start getting their music and their content out there without, you know, feeling like it's forced or because they have to.
Yeah. So whenever somebody is new to social media or very in the beginning phases of using social media, I like to sort of use this metaphor. Let's say you want to start working out more. You're not going to go to the gym and do the CrossFit routine that somebody has worked 5 years to be able to build up to. You're probably going to you know, spend less time at the gym. You're going to lift weights that are less. You might enlist somebody to get advice from or to help you, but you're going to do less. You have to get to the top of that pyramid, like who the creme de la creme best talent are at social media. You have to do layers. So you have to do like layer number one, and layer number one might be like, okay, next month I'm going to make sure that I post twice and I answer all my comments. And that's layer number one. That's me laying down layer number one and doing better this month than I did last month. Okay, now let's see, the layer number two. Okay, I'm going to post once a week this month and I'm going to post on stories every day. But I think a lot of people get overwhelmed because let's say if you go Google like TikTok best practices or Instagram best practices or whatever you might be looking at, you're going to see these things where it's like, you need to post on TikTok 2 times a day, and you need to have stories 8 to 10 times a day on Instagram, and you need to post a photo 3 times a week. And that's just like scary. And that's again, like going to the gym and being like, okay, you need to go bench press 205 pounds right now. So I think we need to give ourselves more grace to work up to those best practices. And as long as you're doing a little bit better, you know, this month than the last month, I think the key thing is being consistent. Like sometimes people have these viral success stories, of course, but the artists that I see really work over time are the ones that they show up and they keep being an artist. Like if you think about, I think a really good example right now is Kim Petras. Kim Petras is, you know, on fire right now. She has this song out with Sam Smith, but Kim Petras, you know, we worked with her for most of her career and were there in the very early days when she had like a couple thousand Instagram followers. And she just kept being an artist. She kept releasing music. She kept evolving. She kept playing shows. She just kept being an artist. And if you keep being an artist consistently and you keep showing up and you keep releasing music, even if the last song wasn't as big as you want it to be, you're eventually going to get to your Sam Smith Unholy music. But you have to be consistent and you have to keep trying. And it has to be clear that you're an artist. And I think that, you know, you can say what you want about Kim Petras and her social media, but if you show up to Kim Petras' social media, it's clear that she's a music artist. You're gonna know what she's about pretty quickly. And I think that's important. It took years to show up and finally get a song that's charting number one all around the world and in different places. But it comes down to she was consistent. She didn't give up. She kept being an artist. And that's all you gotta do. You're on your deathbed. You want to know what you wish your career was, and you have to keep that vision in mind, and you have to keep being that person every day and making content that reflects that person you want to be one day. And if you keep doing it, I feel confident that you're going to keep getting better at that, and you're eventually going to have the success that you want, but you have to keep showing up.
Wow. I love that answer so much. That makes a ton of sense. I feel like you should put that on a shirt in super tiny font and then just let everyone read, you know, your back when you're like, I don't know, on the grocery store line. It's just so true. And I feel like it could be valid for multiple careers, not just a musician or an artist or someone who wants to be an influencer, but, you know, anybody who wants to do something. So I really like that advice. And yeah, I think you kind of covered everything so well. I loved learning more about it from your perspective as someone who's been in the industry for a while, seeing how social media has kind of changed. The landscape has changed and evolved over the past, you know, decade or even few years. It's so crazy. So yeah, thank you so much for sharing all of your advice and insight on this. Yeah, I really appreciate you coming on and chatting.
Of course. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for tuning into another segment of Friday Features on That's the Tea with Alessandra G. I'm so excited that I was able to share this special segment with you guys. I know it's something different, but I think it was really, really cool to hear about the other side of the industry. I want to thank Cassie again for coming on and joining us and chatting with me about everything TikTok, social media, and the internet, because I've learned a ton and I know you guys have too. That's about it. We're almost at Thanksgiving. I'm terrified about how fast time is flying by. I'm not talking about the weather this episode, which is a really good step in the right direction, in my opinion, even though it is freezing. Let me stop myself. And I guess I'll leave you with one final comment. And if you've tuned in before, you're probably so sick of it by now, but that's okay. Stay safe out there, friends, and wash your damn hands.